once more into the breach. I'm not getting it. Am I doing it? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, I can't hear me. All right. That's a good way to start the show.
All right.
Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure. And...
Can you still not hear you?
I can hear me because I turned up the volume over here. The issue, in case you're wondering why we commonly stumble into these things, is we're in the same studio as the prior program. And they have to get all their stuff out of here, and we have to get all our stuff in here. And it's quite a rush because we have quite a lot to do in a very short period of time.
Kind of like Captain America and Superman meeting in the phone booth.
Captain America used a phone booth, too?
I think he has a shield, which he was trying to make a call, and Superman was trying to make a change of clothes, which I think does not pass decency ordinances, even in...
Well, wait a minute. Now, he... Superman had that bodysuit on under his clothes all the time.
We assume. He's changing so fast you don't know.
Where else would he keep it? I mean, it's his hip pocket or something?
Are you trying to be logical about superpowers?
Yes.
Okay. We just wanted to get that out in the open first. He may have. I mean, a lot of times he rips his shirt and it's there, but Hulk Hogan does the same. That doesn't mean he's got it on all the time.
Well, I've often wondered about what his, because he was only one. I actually read Superman comic books extensively as a child, and he only had one super suit that the blue bodysuit with the big S on the chest and all of that kind of stuff that was made for him by his adoptive mother.
Well, that's the only one they did a story about. But the number of times he shot with bullets, unless she had some really advanced technology for the 1920s.
The cloth was made from stuff from Krypton.
Right, in Krypton.
That's the whole point. Now, how she sewed it, that was one of the bigger
questions.
That's the
thing. That's what
right?
I mean
no
about
one's ever
the, advanced,
answered that one.
The advanced technology. What needles did she use?
She must have had a needle from the space capsule and thread from the space capsule. Otherwise, she wouldn't have been able to sew the super suit.
See, all Lex Luthor needed was to find those needles and...
Yes.
And then he could kill Superman with acupuncture.
Or he could shoot the needles at him.
All right. Anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach.
No, this is serious. This is serious business here, in other words. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. And we are occasionally fairly sober and serious-minded people who run an investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas, as well as coming in on Saturday morning and jimmering and jammering on the radio for your entertainment and hopefully enlightenment. Did you like that disclosure? It was a different kind of disclosure.
We're an SEC registered investment advisory firm. So if we say anything particularly stupid,
you can call the SEC.
Right. And I wouldn't do it every time we say something stupid, or they're going to get upset at all the times you have to call them. But they are the regulatory authority for us. Al Gore had no... controlling regulatory authority?
There was
authority.
No controlling authority. Right. Right.
We have one. It's very clear.
It is?
It's clearly
no,
there.
They're clearly there.
But it's not really a clear set of regulations, but they're clearly
right,
there.
Exactly. Yeah. And whatever we do is probably wrong. So if you call them...
We'll get in trouble.
Yeah, we'll get in trouble. Because, you know, we got up this morning and we were breathing without... proper notification and declaration.
Right.
And
I did not sign any papers this morning to allow me to do that.
That's right. And so obviously it doesn't work too well. Anyway, the telephone number in here at the radio station remains the same. And if you're a regular listener to KTM, and if you don't have this memorized, you probably should have your brain checked. Anyway, it's 773-1400. Local area code, of course, is
254-774-1400.
That's it. That is the number, 254-773-1400. And I often, a couple of times recently when people have asked me for our office telephone number, I have given them KTEM's number and then have to take it back.
Right. Wait, that's not... Well, we've said the wrong number on the air enough times that we should have our brains examined. But
we're
hopefully going to be speaking economics today. Though whether or not we actually do, because Superman's a lot more interesting.
Yeah, but that's economics.
Yeah, and that there's a nickel free for every one of those new comic books you bought back then. They're not even called comic books anymore, by the way.
What are they called now?
Graphic novels. They're very graphic.
Oh, okay.
You can tell because of the graphics in them.
But it's how I understand inflation. Because I grasped it as a child, because when I first started buying Superman comic books, they were 10 cents. Not a nickel. Not that old. Yeah, okay. But it may have been that they were 5 cents sometime short while I was alive. But yeah.
Did they even have nickels back then? Was that before we had currency?
We had nickels.
How many cowrie shells did it take to buy a comic book?
I never actually have dealt in cowrie shells.
Okay.
I have dealt in chickens and pigs, but not cowrie shells.
Okay.
They were 10 cents, and then I remember when they went to 12 cents, and then they went to 15 cents, and that was a huge jump.
Yeah,
and
sounds like you're talking about.
Then they went to 25 cents.
Sounds like you're talking about postal rates in about a six-month period.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I bring this up, there's actually a madness to my method.
We know of the madness.
Is that we have now had, as of Friday, 9 consecutive trading days on the New York Stock Exchange where both the Dow and the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index declined. 9 in a row with no rises.
Yep.
Now, they didn't decline a whole lot during that period.
But it was still a decline.
Right. But and the last time we had 9 consecutive days in which those two indices declined without a rise on any day was in December of 1980.
I thought it was 19. Yeah, you're right. 1980. Mm-hmm. That was, no.
December of 1980.
Was
Jimmy Carter
79?
Had. No,
it was 79? Because 80 is when.
No, it was 1980.
1980 was the year, the first year of Reagan's presidency.
It wasn't. He was elected in 1980.
Okay.
But he was inaugurated on January 20th, 1981. I went back and researched this very thoroughly.
Yeah, the election.
Jimmy Carter,
you're right. It's January 20th, right. 1981.
And the Jimmy Carter, and its parallel today is pretty fascinating. One of the reasons the stock market declined slightly for 9 consecutive days is they realized Ronald Reagan was about to be the next president. He was choosing cabinet members.
Right.
And this puts things in a little bit of perspective for me. The traders on the market were terrified. Here was a guy that was going to overhaul the tax code, who said he was going to fully support Paul Volcker and he was going to crush inflation by raising interest rates, by encouraging Paul Volcker to raise interest rates so high. And this is the point. The market was right. This guy was terrifying. I mean, he was a B-grade movie actor, cowboy.
Who didn't have a whole lot of clear policies already planned. And the thing that we say regularly is the market hates uncertainty. Mm-hmm. They were uncertain. And right now we're uncertain again.
And
it doesn't mean that there's bad things coming either way.
But there's not a parallel here, but I wanted to point out what the economy was like and the lack of parallel. Now, one thing is true, and that is we had a seasoned politician, a seasoned president that we knew, and I think was very ineffectual, but that's beside the point, being replaced by a guy who was a movie actor. Now, he'd also been governor of California, but they didn't think too much of that.
And I would say Trump as a reality television show, that's B grade.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely put that in
the
B grade.
I wouldn't raise that up to B. I would say
C
maybe
grade,
a
double B, triple B.
A G grade or something.
With
or,
a lowercase B's
yeah,
at the
right.
end.
But, you know, yeah, junk as opposed to low grade investments.
Right.
But so the issue I want to make is in 1980. The Fed's interest rate wasn't 0.25 to 0.5% and a big question mark whether they're going to raise it a quarter point. Folks, in December of 1980, the Federal Reserve official interbank interest rate was 20%. 20.
That's big. That's a lot.
Inflation was running at 12 to 15% in the United States at that point. And there was a great national malaise going on or something to that effect from, as Jimmy Carter had said it.
We like to call it stagflation these days.
And we were in, the Russians looked like they were winning on every front.
They were winning on every front.
I was in the Army, and I can tell you that our perception was that the Russians were winning on every front. And we were terrified of them. And we felt like if they attacked, it was all classified information time. We were pretty well convinced if they attacked, we were toast. Burnt toast to be thrown out.
Oh, not. I was going to say I like toast, but not burnt toast.
Yeah,
not
well, we were. We toast. Were. It was going to. And we had. It's hard to remember, but we had recently lost our first major war, Vietnam. And I love people. Well, we didn't really lose. Well, we retreated. They occupied all the area that we were defending.
Have you seen the pictures of the exit of Saigon? Yeah. I mean, that's not a victory celebration happening there.
Is there a parallel? Yeah, there's some big parallels right now, but not the interest rates and not the economy. But the big parallels are, although they're not extreme, we thought we had sort of won in Afghanistan and sort of won in Iraq, and we started pulling out, and we got a Democratic president who pulled us out faster. And now we are looking at maybe we didn't win. Maybe they're going to win.
I think you have to define what winning is. We won the wars when we removed the sitting government. I think that's the long-term definition. Yes, we were fighting that government, and we beat them. But what we left was not better than what we came to.
And what happened is that the governments we sort of installed were kind of half-hearted done, and we didn't support them long-term. And as a result, we see ISIS as being... Now, I think we're defeating ISIS, but that's beside the point. We see a decay in the area, whereas following World War II, which is our example of how we think it ought to be, we saw a steady improvement in both Japan and Germany.
Now, let's give you the rest of the story there. This is an important thing, very important. At no time during my lifetime have we allowed the kind of instability to exist in the Middle East that we're seeing right now. I'm not even sure they call it the Middle East correctly anymore. It's, you know, Southwest Asia. But when you're talking about Saudi Arabia, Yemen, that's not really Asia. That's in that weird between continents area that, okay, there's a lot of instability. In Northern Africa, lots of instability. Syria, that I would still call that the Middle East. Though it just has to say, where do you start measuring east?
Well, it's sort of that's a colonial way of looking at things. The British called it the Near East, the Middle East, and the Far East.
Well, we still call Nebraska the Midwest. So that if the middle of the Western Hemisphere is the Midwest, then the middle of the Eastern Hemisphere should be the Middle East, I think. So just being completely non-PC, during my lifetime, I mean, Beirut was a big fiasco years and years ago. There was civil war going on there, fighting, lots of fighting, but it was very well contained. It was something that the Soviets and the Americans were very aware of because that area was absolutely strategically important. Shale is the reason why Syria and ISIS exist. The Syrian war exists. Shale oil. Texas, North Dakota. Because we brought down the price of oil and we made it a commodity that was easy to get, and therefore the people that had built their governments off of the entitlements that came from a high oil price lost stability immediately. You throw in with that the price of wheat rising. The original Arab Spring was about bread riots because Russia had a very wet harvest season and what stopped exporting wheat, and they were the number one exporters of wheat in the world. That caused the Arab Spring. Now, we can say that it was getting out of Iraq that caused the power vacuum, but what about Syria? Syria, you know, that ISIS didn't start in Iraq. ISIS started in Syria. So understanding that the American politics had an impact here, it's important to know that they actually, the wars that we were fighting in that area of the world definitely caused more instability. But that place was ready to fall apart at the drop of a hat anyway, and the drop of the hat happened to be two big boots instead of a hat.
Well, this is, let me give you a slightly different, not contra- contrary perspective that I see. When we went into Germany, we maintained, and in Japan.
Right.
I've asked people this. How long did it take us to so well stabilize Germany and Japan that we could remove American troops from
there? We're still there.
Yeah, we're still there. How many years?
Same with South Korea.
70 years later, we're still there.
Right, and it's part of the political conversation today. Japan doesn't want us to go, but they want us to go. And Germany doesn't want us to go, but they want us to go. Mm-hmm. So the politics of the moment is that some people in Germany or Japan say, get out, but the majority is still saying, we need you.
And there's a reason for that. For 1,000 years, you know, we talk about instability. And we've forgotten just how unstable, what a level of instability there was in Europe. For 1,000 years...
Every generation
saw
years.
A major war in Europe, and it was generally centered on France and Germany fighting over Alsace-Lorraine.
Oh, sometimes it was the Italians fighting each other. Sometimes it was the French fighting
the
English.
One.
Sometimes it was the Spanish fighting the Dutch. But sometimes it was the Swiss fighting everybody around them.
But I'm saying the big ones, World War I and a whole series of wars before that, the Franco-Prussian Wars, going to this series of wars, and it had kind of stabilized into we're going to have a major war, and it's going to be worse with each generation. We got involved in World War One.
Yeah. Pardon me, would you check your pocket watch? Yep, it's past tea time. It's time for war again.
And the United States got involved.
And we don't like war.
Initially, we got involved secretly.
Until Britannia went down.
Well, no, I'm talking about in World War II, until Britannia. Anyway, you mean the Lusitania?
Lusitania, yes. I'm sorry. The Lusitania had a twin ship called the Britannia.
So what happened in we went into World War I, and we pulled out and weren't involved anymore. And sure enough, because we didn't leave troops on the ground who were, by definition, disinterested, we didn't choose one side over the other. We just fought and pacified everybody. And the French hated us, and the British and the Germans hated us pretty much equally. We left a serious commitment of troops there because we saw the instability created by war, by a major war, as being too disruptive to American trade and too disruptive to everything. As we became a world power, as we became involved in world trade, we realized it was economically devastating for there to be a war in Europe. We pulled out after World War I, and there were, for whatever it's worth, both the Republicans and Democrats agreed, let's keep troops out of Europe.
Yep.
And we did, and they deteriorated back into their 1,000-year cycle of war, and we got attacked and said, uh-oh.
We're not doing that again.
So we're going to, there was a reason that America gets involved in these things, and there's a reason, and we forget them. And there's a reason we stay involved and stabilize sections of the world, and it has to do with the fact that all we want to do really is profitably trade across the world, and wars disrupt that horribly. And we have a caller on 7th.
Right. Yeah, and we can get back to this when we're done with the caller. There's a lot more about this. The connections between what I was talking about and what you're talking about here are very clear. So we have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. I just happened to be listening to you guys a little bit this morning. I'm sorry.
We're sincerely sorry
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay. You're talking about something I know something about. I thought it might be of interest to you and your listeners. You know, I was in Saudi Arabia 86, 87, 88, 89, and I got to know pretty much what the locals knew about the country I was living in. And I think it was in 88, one morning in the paper, they published an English paper there, the Arab News, and the headlines in the Arab News was that the King Fahd, who was the king at the time, was imposing an income tax on the expatriates. The common knowledge was that they were deeply, with all the money they were making off the oil and all the free stuff that the United States were giving them, they're still going way in debt, and they decided that something had to be done, so the king is going to put a income tax on the expatriates, not the locals, the expatriates, which was me. Well, the next day, the headlines were that the benevolent King Fahd had decided not to put the tax on, and it didn't say in the paper, but we all knew it. The reason was that all the expatriates in the country by the thousands had resigned as of the first day. And so he had to take the tax away to get the expatriates to stay there and work. Now, in this last week's paper, I read that they're up to it again. Now the Saudis are talking about selling bonds.
They've already done their first release of bonds, yes.
Yeah, the effort is, because with all the money they're making, they're going into deficit spending. And I thought I might share with you why that is. Of course, they provide a lot for the locals. But the main reason is they provide so much for the royal family. When I was there, there was over 5,000 princes.
Yeah, don't you wish we had a situation like that in the United States and you could be one of the princes?
Well, we don't know how many princesses there was because they didn't list them.
Right.
Now, I just thought it might be interesting to you. It doesn't make any difference how much money a government takes in. They can't ever take in enough to give people all of that people are willing to accept.
They've just discovered that in Alaska, by the way.
Yeah, Alaska for many years has been, if you're a resident of Alaska, you've gotten a check every year, because the about 80% of the tax revenue of Alaska comes from oil and gas. Well, oil and gas has slowed way down, and this year may be the first time in probably 40 years that the residents of Alaska don't get a check.
Well, that's a big question, because the government is still talking about giving them the check despite the fact they have huge deficit.
They may borrow money to give everybody a check.
Because once people get used to receiving free handouts from the government, universally.
That's why they're called entitlements, because you feel entitled.
And
now you're talking about something else I know something about.
Oh, okay.
You know, I was flying for Exxon in those days, and I made lots of trips up to Anchorage and Juneau, dealing with the oil situation. And one time, I went up there to take a group of Exxon vice presidents. We had been hit with a $4 billion tax bill by the Alaskan government. And they had, the reason it was $4 billion because they made it retroactive. They passed a law that said levied a tax on us in the past. Now, nobody's ever done that before.
Well, they have. And it's just been a long time.
And the Supreme Court has a tendency to say you can't do that at some point.
Well, it finally went to the Supreme Court. But the reason that the Alaskan government had to do that is because that's when they started promising all this money, especially to the Eskimos, for the use of the land that was dedicated to I'd call them Eskimos, you know, the native Alaskans. They had promised them money for the use of the land, and now all of a sudden they'd promised them too much, and they levied the tax against Exxon, deep-pocket Exxon, to fill the needs of promises that they couldn't keep.
And that's a general problem.
You've hit. There's
even a name for it in economics. It's called the Dutch disease.
Yeah, you've hit the nail right on the head. What I was about to say, right as you were calling in, is that when a government, no matter how it gets its money, it doesn't matter if it's getting it through conquest, through taxation of trade, or taxation of property, it doesn't really matter. If the majority of people in a country get used to receiving more than they pay, then it gets very, very difficult to reverse that, because you get popular uprisings when people didn't get their bread in all across North Africa. They came out. Now, big chunks of that area didn't have American troops. Iraq had American troops in it at that point, and it didn't go crazy, but Syria did. So did Egypt, and so, I mean, Egypt did it in a different way.
Oh, Syria did not have American troops in it.
No, it didn't. Okay. Syria did go crazy, though. So Syria went nuts. Iraq was stable until we removed, I mean, semi-stable. There were still minor events when you consider in a war level.
Well, you guys are slipping off of the reason that I called in, and so I'm going to let you go, but I want to add something to the to something that you're talking about, and that is there's a term used in this country that somebody is rich, or it's often said too rich, but nobody ever defines what rich is.
Oh, I have. We've defined it many times.
Right.
Yeah, but that don't count.
It doesn't.
I can remember when I was a kid in the Boy Scouts, and we weren't rich, but my dad had a job all the time. And one of the scouts showed up there at a meeting one time, and he had a little metal device with a screw top on it that was waterproof, and you could put matches in this little container, screw the lid on, and they would be good.
He's obviously rich.
Now, that kid represented to me rich. Boy, he had to be rich if his folks could afford to buy him something like that. The whole point being this business of who's rich and who's not rich. You know, we're all richer by far now. Everybody's richer now than I was when I was 10 years old.
Right.
Yeah, Warren Buffett has recently been talking about that.
It's all a perception.
So
it's not reality.
No, rich, I have a definition of rich for you. Rich is somebody who has more money than you know what to do with.
And the other part of that is, fellas, and you know this to be true, because you're in the finance advisory business for people with money. There's some people, and I got a couple of them in my family, that there's not enough money in the world to pay all their bills.
Yeah, and they really missed their calling. They should have been elected to Congress.
whatever they get, and I know people, and you deal with people like this all the time, and that's what you were talking about. When you cut off a government payment, this is riot time, you know, because they have naturally, it's like water seeking its own level. These people will naturally seek the level that they can just make it from payday to payday, maybe.
Yep.
And if you cut something, you go up the price of gasoline, milk, or anything that changes that balance, they're in a lot of trouble.
We've got
a nation full of people that live that way, and it's easy to see that's the one that the politicians talk to.
Yep. This is where the glass half full and half empty gets reversed, because you're saying there's a nation full of people. We're not quite to the majority of the nation yet. We're just getting close.
Well, actually, there's some good news there that I think a lot of people have missed out on. We mentioned it on the show, and you may not have, you may not have heard us last week. The savings rate in the United States is running about 5.8% right now, which is the highest it has run in my memory since I've been aware of this. During the late 1990s, and then again in 2007, 2006 and 7, the savings rate in the United States went negative. In other words, people were literally spending more money than they made consistently on average. But today, we are running close to a 6% savings rate in the United States.
Question.
Yeah.
I would say that you need to examine that 6% rate.
We have.
Who is saving the money? Well, the people in the stock market business said it's the investors that are saving their money because they don't know what to do with it.
Well, it's not.
I would challenge the fact that the low end of the wage earners are saving money.
Well, no, the absolute low end is not, but the middle America, the majority of Americans, are in fact saving money right now.
This is something I approached last week, but this is something that I think is really important for people to understand. The millennials are saving money at a rate that has not been seen.
Mm-hmm.
They save as a percentage of their income more money than any other group of ages except those are that are above the age of 70.
Since the last millennials.
Right, which was the hero generation.
And those are the people who, in their youth or in their formative years, experienced the Great Depression. Well, the millennials experienced the Great Recession, and
right.
they saw so many people getting laid off and so many businesses shutting down and so many people carrying boxes out of buildings with their belongings in them that they have had an impression.
Let me point out one thing to you guys, since I'm much older than you are.
Now,
you were correct about the Depression, but the point of the Depression was, because I was in it, born in 29, so the thing was, it didn't change. Monthly, daily, nothing changed. Of course, we had a war,
mm-hmm.
but as far as cost of living and what was going on, it was nothing was changing. These young people now, and you're correct, they were in the recession, but they see things changing weekly. And
well,
that's kind of frightening. If they got any sense at all, they would be saving money because they don't know what's happening next. I'm going to get
okay.
off, but I want to say one thing.
What's that?
Before I leave. And
you're going to tell me how many birthdays.
You don't know this, but I have started what I call JD's Coffee Break. Every Thursday morning at 10 o'clock, a bunch of old guys like me sit down at Henderson's Cafe, drink coffee, and talk about these things.
And you get it all figured out.
Yeah, well, we figured out a lot. And you find out that there is, when you meet somebody and they're able to talk to you in a social group like this, you find out a lot of things about what other people think. And that's very interesting to me. And I just wanted to tell you that anybody in your radio audience that wants to join us Thursday morning, 10 o'clock, mm-hmm. a little advertising here.
You are the guys who they're talking about.
JD's Coffee Break
right.
at Henderson Cafe.
Right. You're the guys who we've been reading about who dropped out of the workforce and are no longer seeking employment and getting paid by the government.
Well, I'm sorry, I missed that.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Have a great day.
Okay, bye.
All right, we've got some commercials to play so we can keep this show on the air. And if you would like to call us while we're playing the commercials or after, the phone number has not changed in here. It is
254-773-1400.
And we'll be back.
Bye.
What if you could store your IRA or 401k?
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And I want to start off by disclaiming those advertisements.
It seems like both major advertisements on there. The Floor House was good.
The Floor House is fine. And I'm not going to say that they're evil, but what I am going to say is that the gold is not regulated by the SEC.
Or by much anybody else, for
and,
that matter.
And as a result, people can make gold coins, and they can make lots of promises and say lots of things on the radio that a person who was suggesting you invest in securities or something couldn't. The other thing is that last commercial about doesn't go up and down with the market and makes money every year and so on is, if it were a securities advertisement, would be patently false.
Right. It would be.
I have
people
seen,
would be
yeah.
having fines to pay for that type of advertising.
And I have. It is actually a life insurance sales ad, but they've circumvented even the state life insurance regulations by the way they do it. And I have known lots of people who have lost lots of money in life insurance. As a matter of fact, one of the news things that's coming out right now is a number of the major life insurance companies are raising the premiums, the internal cost of insurance, not the premiums, so that people who were promised in writing that they were going to, at this point in their life, they could retire and pay no more premiums on their insurance, are suddenly getting hit with a massive premium increase as they get into their 60s and 70s, causing them to be forced to drop their life insurance that they have paid phenomenal amounts of money into, and they're not going to get anything when they die.
Now, there's a large part of our listening audience that hasn't a clue of what we just talked about, because there are a lot of people that listen live on the streaming web, which plays different advertisements, and there are a lot of other people that listen to our podcasts. So just trust us and say that sometimes we don't have anything to do, well, all the time, we don't have anything to do with the choice of commercials that get played. Now, let's get back to that subject. We're talking about two major subjects there, the instability in the Middle East. There was a power vacuum, but it was a power vacuum that was left by oil, a power vacuum that was left by wheat, and a power vacuum that was left by instability of foreign troops. This is an area, North Africa into the Middle East, has been maintained, and I began that conversation by saying in my lifetime it's never had this level of instability because nobody in the world could afford it for that portion of the world to be unstable. Because if you think about what's going on in the major oil-producing countries of the world right now, not counting the United States, if you're talking about Nigeria, it's about as big a mess as you can get. It's the government has no sway in most of the country. If you're talking about Syria, well, there we go. There's Fox News jumping in. We know that's not been fixed yet. If you're talking about Syria, it's the same thing. Even Iraq, where we have a few troops, that's something that really didn't come up in the debates very much, that in the presidential debates, the invasion of Mosul, they were acting like the American generals had a lot to do with it. There's some special forces involved, but the Americans aren't involved in the command and control there. They're involved in a very clear support role. And yeah, we could all jump back in, but I don't think the American public is willing to do that. So there's a lot of other areas that you brought up, one about unemployment. So why don't you hit that, and I've got a bunch of stuff to pile on top of it.
Okay. Well, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which we have on good authority is full of bureaucrats, released a press release. They released a press release on Friday, and the name of the press release is The Employment Situation, October 2016. Doesn't that sound dramatic?
Very.
And what they revealed was that in October of 2016, net layoffs and hires was 161,000. In other words, there are at the end of October, there were, then this is an estimate by them, they'll revise it a couple of times, but they were saying they estimated that there were 161,000 more people working at the end of October than in the United States than at the beginning of October. But they threw another little ringer in there, in that the previous 2 months, when they revised their estimates, they added another 44,000. So that means that, in essence, they announced on Friday that there are 200,000 more people working than we thought were working before. And we did that basically in 1 month.
Right.
Now that's, okay, we got a nation with lots of people in it. Hundreds of millions of people in the United States.
So one more piece of information that also the Bureau of Labor Statistics came out with the day before, and you mentioned this in the newsletter as well, is that productivity rose at 3.1%.
Yes. To bring it all the way back to where it was, in other words, it dropped during the first two quarters of this year and the last quarter of last year. So guess what? Productivity is right back up where it was a year ago.
Right. But what we've talked about on the air, lots of times on the air, is that this is a very normal part of the hiring cycle.
Right.
You got to take your best workers off of work to get them to train the new employees, because you want the new employees to be trained by the best workers. But that means that their productivity drops drastically during that time period. The fact that the per worker productivity is back up to where we were last year really means that we're more productive now, because we measure productivity in a per worker basis. How many units of something does one worker make in a day? And then we look at the prices for those units. If the unit's price hasn't gone up, then that's pure productivity growth. Well, we have more workers, which means the level of productivity that we had, and coming up out of the Great Recession, the productivity growth was very nice. During 2008, we had a 6.7% productivity growth, and that's because we had to lay off a lot of people. A lot of people lost their jobs, and the people that were left had to do more with less. So we got to a point where the productivity started dropping in very small amounts. And we've looked at that. We say that's when workers were getting tired. They're still required to do more with less, and they're tired. They've been doing it for years now. And then this most recent hiring boom started, and that's not going to be in the political debate, by the way. Neither the Democrats or the Republicans are interested in talking about new jobs. And that's something you should know as Americans.
Well,
if both political parties aren't interested, it's because neither of them are incumbents, and they want to tell you that the world is broken so they can fix it. So that's something very important to recognize, that we've had a hiring boom. We're at a 5.9% unemployment rate. You're talking
4.9.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm so used to having the higher unemployment. We're 4.9%. We're talking about a traditional level where everybody that wants a job has one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not everybody. There are still people out there looking that have been looking a long time. You mentioned it in the newsletter. The Bureau of Labor Statistics talks about it very clearly, and they're metropolitan area employment and unemployment survey. A lot of people have had to stay in areas where the jobs left because they can't leave because they own property there. And to sell the property right at this point means that they would be in massive debt. They would have to pay money to leave the property or declare bankruptcy to leave the property. And that's not something that they're willing to do.
Yeah, the average house sale in Detroit, according to Trulia, is for $40,000.
Yeah.
And there are, they have high unemployment there. And here in Central Texas, just bring it right into the Temple area, where the houses are in the mid-hundred, the median, the median house sale here in Central Texas is
$140,000
and up. And as a result, a person who's even if they didn't owe any money on their house and they sold their house and they got $60,000, well, they wouldn't get the $60,000 because it'd be realtor's fees and all that kind of stuff. So let's just say they got $50,000 for the sale of their house. They come to Central Texas and they're in their 50s, a white male in their 50s.
That's what the majority of people lost jobs there.
And
work.
So this person comes to Central Texas where there is a shortage of workers. If they're going to live at the same standard of living that they had in Detroit, they can't.
Or Illinois, almost anywhere, or most of Michigan. I mean, you just go through a big chunk of what used to be our industrial center, and the people that have been able to leave have gotten jobs. The people, and that's why I say not everyone has jobs, but even in Detroit, the unemployment rate is not horrible.
A lot of people have left. It's only 1% higher, right.
So we're talking about 5.9 instead of 4.9, and that's a very reasonable unemployment rate almost at any time in the history of Detroit. There's just a lot less people there. Now, one other piece of information that came out in August, but it's worth talking about now, is we're seeing housing starts up. Housing starts went up at 11% this last month. That's a really, really cool thing. People are building houses again and willing to pay for them. And people, I've mentioned that too, said, well, are they really willing to pay them, or are they just going to default on the loan? Well, this is the piece of information that came out in August, and will be coming out again in a few days for this last quarter. The delinquency rate on mortgages is at a 10-year low. It's pre-recession levels of low. Before the crash, when people were very happy with the delinquency rate, we're back there now. So yes, people have been saving. They're waiting to buy. The banks aren't letting them buy unless they put a lot of money down. They've got to have skin in the game. And we're seeing that come up. And basically the underlying factor here across all the subjects that we've hit is that the economy is waiting right now as far as the market's concerned. But as far as the actual workers, as far as the actual people that are producing, that are doing things, wages are up, productivity is up, employment is up. You just go down the list. Housing starts are up. Delinquency rate is down. That means that it really doesn't matter who gets elected as president. They're going to have a boom in the economy to take credit for. So if you think that Trump is going to get elected and make the economy boom, if he gets elected, the economy is going to boom. You're going to have a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And if Hillary Clinton gets elected, the economy is going to boom.
Right. And the people that support Hillary say she's going to help the economy. So what we're looking at here is what's very common and what people lose sight of, because the promises going back and forth that say the president gets to do all these things that they don't actually get to do. There's no magic button in the White House that changes the economy. There's nothing that, you know, Hillary Clinton is talking about the large, she wants to create jobs. She wants to put together programs that will be the largest hiring since World War II. Well, there's only one way a president can do that, and it doesn't matter if it's Trump or if it's Clinton. The reason why the hiring levels were so high in World War II is because we put a lot of people in the military because we were fighting a war.
And we started off with double-digit unemployment.
We don't have double-digit unemployment. If we create as many jobs as both candidates want to create, we're going to have to import a lot of immigrants.
Yeah.
A lot of immigrants.
Well, they're not actually immigrants until they get here, so we can't import them.
Right.
Yeah, and this is that is a major, major issue, by the way, as you look at what we're doing. By the way, we're not having enough children. Native-born Americans are not having enough children to replace the population.
Right. We would be shrinking if that were the case. Yeah.
And we have a tremendous advantage a lot of people say it's a huge disadvantage. I disagree, in that we do have a substantial immigration flow of people who want to work, and this is crucial, and who have the same religion we do. When I say we do, the vast majority of Americans have some form of a Christian socioeconomic religious belief. They call themselves Christians, or at least their thought process is Christian.
Right.
And they resent having, as any people will, it's one of the reasons we got a Brexit, is when you have people come in that celebrate their Sabbath on a different day and who pray differently and who sounds like they worship a different God, then it is really, really disruptive. Now, this has happened before in America. There was a time when the Protestants and the Catholics were at each other's throats, and they were each were convinced the other one was worshiping something akin to Satan.
Right. If you think about the big debate before Jack Kennedy being president.
Well, you can't think about it from very many people. Now, our caller could, but
right. And the reality is that he was our first Catholic president, and that was a big deal because the founding fathers were very clear. You got the freedom to practice your own religion, but the Catholics didn't agree with them. So there was a lot of fear in this country when John Kennedy was elected that he was somehow going to answer to the Pope, that the Pope was going to be dictating American politics, because that's the history of Christianity. It didn't happen. Obviously, it didn't happen.
Well, the point is that we have an advantage, and the advantage is that we have a long history of integrating Hispanic people into our society. Texas
right.
is... Tex-Mex food is normal.
Right. Texas and California are the mm-hmm. places with the most integration there.
And
in fact, the first vice president of Texas, when Texas was a nation, mm-hmm. was Mexican.
Right. Well, I think he would have called himself a Texican.
Right. He was a Texican at the time. They were both Texicans, but Sam Houston and I think his name, boy, it's frying my brain. I think his name was Gonzalez. I'm going to have to look that up.
I think you got it right. Anyway, the point is, it's uncomfortable having people coming in speaking a different language. We've run into this many times in our history. The Eastern Europeans, the Europeans that came pouring in the late 1800s and early 1900s, created a great deal of backlash. And, by the way, our immigration system is still based on that wave of people coming in. So this is the point. We need immigration if we're going to create jobs in a more healthy economy. Why? Well, because as Gene Epstein pointed out in Barron's today, we have pretty much filled up the pot. Now, you've been listening to the Personal Wealth Coach for the last hour, and our telephone numbers, if you'd like to contact us off the air, are 254-947-1111. We have voicemail on the weekends. We have live people during the week. And
if you'd like to go to our webpage, it's tpwc.com, or you can go email us directly at Jake or Jeff at tpwc.com. Listen to our podcast there. Until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
AM, AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEN.